Morning. Good morning, everybody. We'll make a start straight away. I'd like to thank everybody for coming, and I'd like to thank our sponsors. We have sponsorship today, not only from our regular sponsor, where the Shirim is sponsored for... Thank you. No worries. You want to see my face? Wow. My mum will be pleased. Okay. The Shirim for 2025 are sponsored Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman Zichronim Ivrocha. So that sponsorship is anonymous for the whole year. But we have a very special sponsor. Amy and Ephraim Bassan are sponsoring the Shir today in memory of Amy's mother, Pnina Bas Chaim Yosef Rivka Rachel, whose Yotzeit is today. Zichroni Livracha should be an aliyah for her neshama. Amy and her husband, when he can be here, are one of the most loyal and constant supporters of the Shir from its earliest days, I think, or at least for many, many, many years. So we're very grateful to Amy and Ephraim for that sponsorship and very grateful for their support of the Shir. So if I could ask you to turn off your phones, please. As you know, I've been away for a couple of weeks. You probably worked that out if you came last week or the week before. I'm sure you had a good time without me. But I am going to be here now, please God, without a break for the next few months. I'm going away just briefly in August, but I will give you some notice of that. I'm not sure exactly if the Shirim will happen in the same way in that period. After Tisha B'Av, we'll see. Rabbi Shaw will give out announcements in due course. Okay, we're running up to Shavuot, Be'ezrat Hashem, coming up very, very soon. And something that we have not spoken about for many, many, many years is the issue we're going to raise today, which is the Aseret HaDibrot. And I'd like to talk about the Ten Commandments, although that's, of course, not what the Torah calls them. Hang on, let's get this sorted out. That's not what the Torah calls them. The Torah calls them the Aseret HaDvarim. Which is, of course, the 10 statements or the 10 sayings, because there, of course, are more than 10 commandments in the 10 commandments. Let's get that clear from the very start. We're not going to go into that explicitly, but there are at least 11 or 12, maybe 13. But they change the world. The 10 commandments are a new constitution for humanity. They are the Brit between the Jewish people and Hashem. They're expressed this way constantly as that covenant. And therefore, we need to work out, like, what does that mean for us? Why do we read the Ten Commandments? What do they represent for us? Do they represent something special? Are they different to the rest of the Torah? And specifically, a minhag that will not die and every year resurrects itself is, do you stand or do you sit? Or do you do a different thing every year? Or do you just do what everybody else does? Or do you dafka do something different to what everybody else does? Which seems to be the minhag of some people that I've met in my life. So we'll go through that, we'll have a look at that, and hopefully we'll get some clarity on it. Now, it's important to remember, and I didn't put it on the sheet, but I want to mention it at the beginning, that the recitation of the Ten Commandments, together with other key passages in Dvarim, is built into the Torah itself. One of the 613 mitzvot is Hakel. And every 7 years, the king has to stand up during Sukkot, during Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and read in public, in the most public way possible, with all the men there, with all the women there, with those children there, with everybody present. He reads from Dvarim, and that reading includes not only the Shema and the second paragraph of the Shema V'ayim Shemoa, but also the Ten Commandments. So built into the Torah is a seven-yearly reading of the Ten Commandments. And I heard many years ago from Rabbi Menachem Liebtag that this is meant to be a reenactment of the Har Sinai experience. That every 7 years, there's, if you like, a re-coming together of all the Jewish people. That's why everybody has to be there. The women have to be there. The children have to be there, just like the original Har Sinai. Not only that, but it comes immediately after the Shemitah year. And during the Shemitah year, the people are living off minimal rations. And if you look, Rabbi Liebtag, he's got an essay on this online. If you look carefully, you'll see the amount that people are allowed to eat, take from their produce during the Shemitah year is an omer. It's exactly the amount that people got in the man. And just like the Torah, the Chazal say that the Torah could only be given to Ochlei Haman, those people who are able to be part of that not socialist is not the word I'm looking for, but where everybody has the same, nobody has any more, nobody has any less. During Shemitah year, that is a reenactment of the eating during the period of the desert. Leading up to Matan Torah, which is the Hakel. So reading the Ten Commandments in public is built in to the system. However, we now have, we don't have Hakel anymore, obviously, or there have been attempts to reenact it in a kind of sort of ki'ilu way on Sukkot. But we do have Kriyat HaTorah, which is of course Midrabbanan, and now we read the Torah, we read the Ten Commandments three times a year. We read them in Parshat Yitro, in Shemot, we read them in Dvarim, in Parshat Vetchanan, which falls usually in around August. And then, of course, we read them on Shavuot. And the question is, how does that work? Why do we do that? And do we do it in any way differently? You'll be aware, of course, that in theory, at least, there is a different trope. There's a different ta'amim for the reading of the Ten Commandments. And sometimes there's meant to be tam elyon, and sometimes there's meant to be tam tachton. Tam tachton is the regular laning pattern for the rest of the laning, which divides up the psukim by verse. So whatever's in one verse is all read together as one unit, and then the next verse, and then the next verse. So for example, the last three or four of, commandments number 6, 7, 8 are all really one verse. So in Tam Tachton, are all read as one verse. But in Tam Elyon, it divides it up by commandment. Okay, not by verse. So each commandment has its own specific unit. Therefore, sometimes it's a longer, trop, and sometimes it's a shorter trop, depending on how long the commandment is. Today, the minhag in most places seems to be to use Tam Elyon for every reading of the Aseret HaDibros, which is interesting, because that's not how it was originally. That's not how everybody does it. Some people do Tam Tachton as part of the regular laning, and Tam Elyon only on Shavuos, and I think that was the original minhag. But insofar as any minhag is original, the Ashkenazi minhag, I'm not sure what the Sephardim do. But now I seem to find when people read on Ve'et Chanan or Yitro, they tend to read the Tam Elyon. Listen out for it when you get to August, see what they read and send me a WhatsApp and let me know. But we read them these three times a year. Now, the Ten Commandments are paraphrased many, many times in Nach as well. Yirmiyahu talks about them specifically, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal. That comes up again and again and again, stealing being here, kidnapping as well, or specifically. And that comes as a trope many, many, many times, as a key element of Jewish thought. And in fact, there have been many people over the centuries, commentators, who've said that actually the Ten Commandments, and again, I'm going to call them the Ten Commandments because that's what we normally call them, encapsulate within them all of the mitzvot in the Torah. And this is an idea which is very famously brought in Rav Sajigon. Before Rav Sajigon, it was brought in Philo. Philo also says this in his writings. But perhaps more importantly for us, it's a Talmud Yerushalmi. Look at number one. Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, Amayafa lamdeini Chananya ben Achi Rebbe Yeshua. So my cousin Chananya, or my nephew Chananya, I should say, has taught me this very beautiful saying. Ma hayam hazeh ben gal gadol legal gadol galim ketanim. Just like the sea between the big waves, there are many smaller little mini waves. Maybe I should call them microwaves. Okay, kach. Bein kol dibur v'dibur diktukeha v'otioteha shel Torah. So between every dibur, if you like, between the lines of the dibrot of the Ten Commandments, the Aseret HaDvarim, you get the kind of mini reverberations of all of the different mitzvot. And again, Rav Sajigon shows how they fit together. This commandment incorporates all of these halachot, and this commandment all of these. So this is an ancient idea that the Aseret HaDibrot are not standalone, but they somehow incorporate all of the Torah. Now, apart from Hakel, source number two shows us, and this is a very ancient source, that the reading of the Ten Commandments was actually part of the temple service. This is the oldest source that we have for anything that we would call today, called a sidur, a seder hatfilah. This is a very ancient source back to the Second Temple period. And what did they do? So have a look with me together, number two. Amalehem hamamuna. So this was the service in the temple. They got up very early in the morning, they did the Trumat HaDeshen, they haven't yet brought the Korban Tamid, the sun has not yet risen, and this is the service in the temple. They haven't brought any korbanot yet. A fit like the korban tamid. Baruchu, okay? Bracha achat. They said to them, let's all bless one blessing. Everyone bless a blessing. Maybe they said baruchu, like we say baruchu in the service. Or they just said to them, make a blessing. Vehein baruchu, and they made a blessing. What was this blessing? So I brought you the baratanura, Rav Avadim baratanura here in the brackets. Ahava rabbah. He wants to say this was the blessing that we make before the Shema of Ahava Rabbah, that talks about God's love, God's giving the Torah to the Jewish people, etc. V'achashe here hayom, after the day would rise, v'zarcha hachama mevarchin yotze'or. They can say yotze'or, but only after sunrise. They can only, or at least after dawn, they can't say yotze'or when it's still dark. So they have to start the day with Ahava Rabbah. V'seder brachot einu ma'akev. And it doesn't actually matter which order you say them in, meaning they're going to say yotze'or later, don't worry. But for now they said Ahava Rabbah. They identify like that. Karu aseret hadvarim, and then they read the Ten Commandments. Then Shema, Vayahaim Shmoa, Vayomer, meaning they say the Shema with the bracha before, but they add in before the Shema the Ten Commandments. Baruch Hu Ha'am, and then they bless the people, the Kohenim or whoever's there, bless the people. Shalosh brachas, three special brachas. Emes V'yatziv, which is of course what we say immediately after the Shema in the morning. The Avodah, which is not what we say in the morning. This is a special bracha about the Avodah. U'birkat Kohanim. What's Birkat Kohanim? It's not the Birkat Kohanim like this, says Ravadi Mibarat Tanura. Kriyat Hapsukim Bilvad. It's a special bracha that the people say, or that all the, I don't know if it's all the Kohanim together, or all the people there. They say this bracha, Kriyat Hapsukim Bilvad, Velonisiyat Kapayim. They're not waving their arms in the air, they're giving a bracha which incorporates the words, Yivarecha Hashem V'yishmarecha, etc., etc. Shaloh Hayar Kohanim Nosim Et Kapayim, Elalacha Korban Atamid. Because the Kohanim only do the special Birkat Kohanim after they bring the Korban Tamid. And this is all first thing in the morning before it's even light. The Loya Mavarchin Halach Brachas Elekadeshi Yeh HaTamid Mekubal. But they're really making these brachas that we're davening, that the Korban that we're about to bring in the temple should be received. Beratzon willingly by Hashem. The Loya Niftarim Bekach Mitzvila Shmona Esrei. And they don't exempt any personal obligation of Mitzvila Shmona Esrei. This raises an interesting question, which I'm not getting into in depth, which is in the temple period, second temple period, did they have the tefillah service parallel to the korbanos service? A lot of people erroneously think that the tefillah we have was enacted only after the temple was destroyed in order to replace the temple service, the sacrificial service. That is definitely not correct. And we see that from here, that there was a type of tefillah service going on during the second Beis HaMikdash. Actually, if you, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but if you look in Sefer Ben Sira, Sefer Ben Sira is a mid to late Second Temple apocryphal book, meaning it didn't make it into the Tanakh, but it is quoted quite often by Chazal, Sefer Ben Sira. Sefer Ben Sira talks about the fact of tefillah, that the people had tefillah together with korbanot, and therefore it's clear that they had some level of tefillah together with it. And he says, you don't exempt yourself from tefillah Shmona Esrei, they're going to have to daven properly later, but this was a special prayer service in the temple before the korban, which involved the Ten Commandments. Ube Shabbos, and on Shabbos, Moisifim bracha achas, they add an extra bracha lemishmar hayotze, to give a bracha to the kohanim, pluga that is leaving. Meaning the kohanim switched over duties every Shabbat, and they ate the lechem hapanim together, the incoming group and the outgoing group, and they give a bracha to the outgoing group, a bracha on Shabbat. Just in parentheses, I think I mentioned this at some point, one of the reasons we call bread on Shabbat challah is because challah, which we don't call it any other day of the week, challah is the name for each of the lechem apanim. Okay, the lechem apanim, the one lechem apanim was called a challah. And one of the reasons we call challah challah on Shabbos is because Shabbos they ate the lechem apanim. That was the day that they ate the special bread, and we call it challah because of they called it challah, which is very interesting. I heard that from my son once, and it's an obvious point which I never thought about before. I don't know if you ever thought about it. Okay, so they had the Aseret HaDibros every single day in the Beis HaMikdash as one of the recitations. So why do we do it now? Why do we say the Aseret HaDibros every day? We say the Shema every day. So have a look at number three. Says the Yerushalmi, the Rav Masna and Rav Shmuel bar Nachman Travayu Amri. These two famous Tanai Amoraim, I should say the following. Bedin haya, it really should be Sheyia Kairin Aseris Advarim B'chol Yom. We should really say the Ten Commandments every day. It should be part of our daily prayers. It should come in the Shema, probably before the Shema. We should say the brachas. We should say the Ten Commandments, and we should say the Shema. Umipnei ma ein Kairin Aso. But why don't we read it even at the time of the Yerushalmi? Mipnei ta'anot ha'minim, because of the murmurings, the claims of the, well, we'll see who they are, the minim, the sectarians, the apostates, we'll see who they are. Shalo yeh ha'omrim, the people shouldn't say, Elu levadan nitnu lo leMoshe miSinai. People will insinuate that only the Ten Commandments were given to Moshe on Sinai, and that's why we say them, and not the rest of the Tefillah. Not the rest of the Chumash, I should say. Sorry, I'm still a bit jet-lagged. Just getting over there. I wake up around 12 o'clock in noon at the moment, okay? I was on the West Coast as well, which is particularly difficult. I don't know why people wouldn't say, well, the Eseret Hadibros and the Shema, that maybe they'll say about that. There's something about the Ten Commandments. And we'll see in a minute, actually, I do have a suggestion to make, that the Yerushalmi is coming off the New Testament, and specifically the Sermon on the Mount, the book of Mark and Matthew, which flag the Ten Commandments specifically, and I think that's what the Yerushalmi is getting at, that we don't want people to say that the Ten Commandments is all that's left. We'll get to that in just a minute. That's the Yerushalmi. What's the Bavli say? Have a look at number four. Says the Bavli. They talking about the temple. They would say the Teres Adibrois, Shema, V'hayayim Shemoa, V'yoma, Emes V'yatziv, Avoida, Brikas Koinim. This brings the Mishnah from Talmud that we just read. Ama Rav Yehuda, Ama Shmuel. Af begvulin bikshu likrois kein. Now, a little bit different to the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi said, by rights, we should read the Ten Commandments every day. The Bavli says, not just theoretically, but people campaigned for this. Bikshu. They wanted to do this. People wanted to do this. But we didn't let them because it's already been cancelled because of the murmurings. The tarumos aminim. So too we have a brisa, Rabbi Nasan Omer, a Tana, from the time of the Mishnah. Begvulin, in the Gvulin. Now where's the Gvulin? Gvulin, I'm the peripheria. Yeah? Not in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim they had it clear that we're not doing that because we don't do that anymore. But in the provinces they used to say, Bikshu likroiskein, they wanted to reinstate the Ten Commandments. It was a kind of balabatasha thing. People wanted to say the Ten Commandments. No, we're not going to let you. Rabba Bar Barachana Sava Lemakvin Hubasura. Rabba Bar Barachana says in Babylonia they wanted to bring them in again in Surah. Again, this is the minag that will never die. Here they're not talking about standing up for the laning, they're talking about reading them every day. In Surah they wanted to introduce it, they wouldn't let them. Amar Rav Chisda, no, kva bitlum ibn tarum saminim. So in Surah they had to quash it. Ameima Sava, Ameima in Babylonia says, Limigvein Hubanehrda. They wanted to bring it in Nahar Dah. You can't stop people from campaigning on this. Amalei Rav Ashi until Rav Ashi. This is Rav Ashi. That's right at the end of the Gemara. Rav Ashi had to say to them, Kvar biklam ipnei tarum usaminim. So this is a constant refrain that people over a 500-year period since the temple was destroyed keep campaigning to have this put back. We want it back. We want to say the Ten Commandments every day. And they keep knocking them down. We cannot do this because of the minim. The question is there a point at which we're no longer worried about the minim? Who are the minim, and do they still bother us today? So we're going to have a look. Look at number five. It says Rashi, Mipnei Tarumos HaMinim. Shelo Yomru La'ame Ha'aretz, we don't want these heretics to say to ignorant, straightforward, but unlearned people, Ein Sha'a Torah Emes, the rest of the Torah is not true. V'teidu, you should know, She'ein Karin Ela Masha Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu V'shamu Mipiv B'Sinai. We're only reading what God said to Moshe, and that's only the Ten Commandments, and that's why we read it. The rest of the Torah is kind of made up, or it's, small print that we're not interested in. Rashi actually makes it very clear, if you have the uncensored Rashi, which I brought you here. It's not hard to get hold of the uncensored material these days, but if you look in a standard Vilna Shas, you will only see the censored version. Haminim says, number six, Rashi, Akum, which itself is probably a word that was changed by the church from Goyim, because the church didn't like the word Goyim, okay, and they changed it to Avoides Kochavim, Ovde Kochavim Umazales. But the original Rashi says, Talmide Yeshu, early Christians. And the early Christians are normally called the Minim, not exclusively so, and there is scholarship on whether Minim always means the Christians or it can mean other heretics, and exactly what kind of Christians are we talking about, a certain sect of Christians, because there's no such thing as the early Christians. Early Christianity was divided up into many, many, many groups, and it's only when you got to the Council of Nicaea, Constantine actually, brings them all together, creates what's called the Catholic Church, which is meant to be inclusive, but blocks out this group and the Arians and the Gnostics. And so there were many, many, many different groups of Christians. But somehow or other, this is what we're worried about. Now, it's important to mention, I didn't bring it on the sheet, maybe I should have brought it on the sheet, that one of the things claimed by early Christianity, or some groups within early Christianity, is that no one had to keep the commandments anymore other than the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments is all that's left, and some early Christian groups viewed them almost as natural law. It's obvious with, you know, do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery. And that's said again and again if you look in Matthew, if you look in Mark, again if you look in the Sermon of the Mount, on the Mount. I'm not necessarily recommending it specifically, but I'm just saying, you see again and again, do not murder, do not steal, do not... And again, there's no surprises there, because these are said in this way in Hosea. They're just, you know, reverberating what's said in Yirmiyahu, Yilhavdil in Yirmiyahu, and in Hosea. But there were people who wanted to say this was all that's left. It's not so straightforward. In what way is keeping Shabbos natural law? Okay, maybe you could say keeping Shabbos is natural law, because it's natural that you would want to have a rest day, you know, some day that you recuperate or something. Kibud Av V'Em, I suppose you could see as natural law. Believing in God, you could see as natural law. So we wanted to avoid this implication that this is all there is, this natural law group of commandments, and the rest is now gone. Yes?
So when did the Christians change this sentence, if they believe the Ten Commandments?
Well, in theory, they still believe in the Ten Commandments. Meaning, if you look at, if again, you can. I have a home. I can send it to you. A comparative list of not all Christian groups view the Ten Commandments as even number them the same way. The Catholics and the Protestants do not number them the same way. That's the first thing, and they change the wording often. You know, they don't talk about the "I took you out of Egypt" because, like, it's not shaykh for them, or Egypt's just you know, some parable for something else. Or they don't talk about Shabbos on Shabbos. They talk about the Lord's Day, because then you can read that in however you want. So the Christians do not necessarily all represent the Ten Commandments in the same way. So even today, there's not just one Christian view on this. There are multiple Christian views on this. And even with our within our own Chumash, the Aseret HaDibros in Shemot are not the same as the Aseret HaDibros in Dvarim. There are subtle differences, and many understand that Dvarim is in some ways a commentary on Shemot. So we have already a development within the Chumash, but Lahavdil, the Christians have many different readings of it, but it seems that this is what they're trying to get at today. By the way, there have been many lawsuits in America by people who object to having the Ten Commandments in public places, because they say it's a breach of the First Amendment, the Church and State. Separate, which amendment is that? Or is that the Constitution itself? It's the First Amendment. Okay, fine. And therefore, there you can see Ten Commandments all over the place. You can see them on the Supreme Court building in America. You can see them in many, you know, local courts and town halls, etc. So, and there are people that object against this. If you do a survey of what's written on these Ten Commandments that appear in public places in America, it's often not the same thing at all. Okay? You going to say?
They just passed the law that...
Oh, really? Okay, so then that's research now. They just passed the law that in Manhattan, all the public schools have to have the Ten Commandments on the wall. So what are they going to write on the Ten Commandments? Let's do a survey. Because if you go to a shul and you see the luchas, which we're going to talk about in a minute, what you often have is just like the first word or the first letter, which is not very helpful. Do we have them here? Okay, here we are, you see? I didn't even realize, right behind me. So you have two words from each of the Ten Commandments, which works fine for the last five, or most of them, but doesn't really tell you that much for the first. It gives a, you know, an indication. Zachor et ma. Zachor et, yeah, so exactly. So we'll see, and there are some people who object to having that kind of much abbreviated version. Okay, let's take this forward. Let's look for a second at number seven. So it says the Rashba. The Rashba was asked in the 13th century. Okay, can we bring this back? Can we say the Ten Commandments now? Can we read them every day? Sha'atam od, you ask, says the Rashba. He's living in Spain in the 1300s, 1400s. Ma'u lo ma'aseres hadvarim, hadibros, sorry, b'shacha b'beis ha'knesses. Can we start saying the Aseres hadibros again in shul? I don't know if it's can we start, or there were people doing them, people saying them still, and they were asking, is this okay? It could have been that as well. It seems that way, yeah? There are people who want to do this. Does that mean they're doing it? Or they want to start doing it? I suspect that they were doing it, but I can't prove that. It says, should we be doing it or not? I brought you the first three words, asur la'asot kein. No, you can't do it. You're not allowed to do it. And the Shulchan Aruch actually brings that if you are going to say the Ten Commandments, you should say them privately at the beginning of the service, but still brings in that there are people who say them. I don't know if anyone here gets to shul early enough to actually get through even saying the Aseret HaDibros. I confess, I don't think I've ever got to shul early enough that I'm still, you know, got time to say the Aseret HaDibros before I get into the main part of davening. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, he says in number 8, Tov Lomar. Means you don't have to, but it's good. Meaning it's not a bad thing to say Parshat HaAkedah, Parshat Haman, Aseret HaDibros, Ukorban Mincha, Shlamim, Chatas, Va'asham. Meaning, it's not a problem to say them as long as you do it at the beginning. Says the Rama, v'dafke b'yochid, only in private, mutar lamu aseres hadibros. The aseres hadibros specifically, you can only say in private, b'chol yom every day, aval asur la'omram b'tzibur. You may not read them in a tzibur. And by the way, there are still some congregations, some communities, that publicly lay in the korban tamid, b'tzibur, before mincha. In Monks, when I used to go to Monks, every afternoon in the German shul, Yekesh shul in London, before Mincha, someone gets up and lanes the Korban Talmud in public. So the Korban Talmud does get laned every day, but the Aseret HaDibros not. And the Mishnah Berurah comes in and says, number 9, but Sibur, why only in public? Why never in public and only in private? Mipnei HaKoyfrim, because there are heretics, Sheyomru Ein Torah El Azor, that this is the only Torah, Ubifrat Bizmanenu, and this is specifically problematic these days. It's not a problem that's gone away. It's a problem that's actually worse, he says. You're not even allowed to have a Ten Commandments pamphlet, which is for public laning. You could have a Korban Tamid laid down on a beautiful sheet that you lane from every day in public, but you can't have the Ten Commandments. Other people say, no, maybe you can say them in public. The only problem is, the only problem is putting them in the brachas, like they used to do in the temple. Yes, there are people that say that. But if you read them publicly before Baruch Sha'ama, mutar afat sibur. I've never seen any. Have you ever seen a shul where they publicly read the Ten Commandments before Baruch Sha'am? I've never seen it. Because he says, but we don't allow that either. No public readings at all, but Sibur, Klal v'chlal. Klal u'klal. No reading at all. And if you're going to read them privately, don't make it part of your regular davening. Make it in brachas. Putting it in brachas is aser. In Krishma, you should only have it privately. You should only have it at the beginning. Meaning, we are still concerned about this issue. Okay, so, you know, the issue of reading the Ten Commandments, I think we've pretty much dealt with. It's a problem. I remember when I went to my non-Jewish school, they gave me a New English Bible. They gave all the young boys, there were only boys in the school, a New English Bible. This was there's no separation of church and state in England, so they're quite happy to give everybody a Bible. And one of the things, I don't have it anymore, but one of the things that I remember distinctly about it when I opened it up is it had two font sizes. Big font. The bigger print was all the stuff that they thought was important. And the small print was all the stuff that they thought was, old Jewish stuff that we don't really do anymore. So this idea of the big print and the small print is there still in the Christian world today very much. Although we will come back to a more Jewish version of big print and small print at the end. Okay, let's go on. Yes, sir.
They give the Bible out today in school.
They do?
Do you think they would give it out in an English school today?
That's really interesting to ask. I could email my old school, Leeds Grammar School, and say, do you still, you're saying I bet they don't? No, I bet they don't as well, actually. But they used to do, okay? They charge enough, they probably could. Okay, fine. Number 10. Let's go to the issue of standing. So, okay, we're not going to read it specially. But when we lay it on Shavuos, or during the year, should we stand up, give it special covered? So there's a very interesting tshuva of the Rambam. Let's look what the Rambam says here. Now, this tshuva of the Rambam was not available until the 20th century. So many of the commentators through the later Rishonim and Achronim did not have access to this. But we'll see in a minute one of the reasons that, one of the indications of that. But if you look in the Rambam, he's very clear. Let's look at his wording. Bedavar ir, I'm talking about a town, he says, he's been asked. Shenhigu lachachameha, that the rabbis of that town, the rabbis now passed away, it comes out later, muchubadeha, and the honorary officers of the town, have instructed the town, leishev be'eit kriyat eser hadibros, to sit, not to stand, when the Aseres HaDibros are being read. B'sefer Torah b'tzibur, when they're being read in the Sefer Torah. Hoyel b'zaysa ir haita mikaidem, and this city before that rabbi, previously, okay, Mu'utzet ha-chochma was a very limited chochma. They were like a not particularly knowledgeable town. Uka'ashe ba'aleh Rav Gadol. And once a Rav came to them, a great Rav, Kainen ha-chochma, ba'u gader, ba'kama gederot, he made a number of decrees, a previous Rav for that town. The Hayamin Hagam Mikaidem Lifnei Bo Zeharav, and before that Rav, who's now passed away, this great Rav, they had a different Hanhaga, Shiyamdu Kolamba Esakriyas Adibris. Okay, Besefer Torah, but Sibo Misiba Tadvarim. So the Rav that's just now died made them all sit down, but before the Rav came, people used to stand up, but it wasn't a particularly knowledgeable community. And now the Rav's died, and people are asking the Rambam, well, we never really liked this minag that the Rav brought in to sit down, and we always used to stand up, so we'd like to stand up. And they're asking him, is that okay or is that not okay? V'ama b'chlad shuvatzor. And this Rav previously said to them, shekol mi sherotze lakum be'eit kriya sefer Torah be'esa adibros roi ligor bo. That anyone who wants to stand for kriya satorah, for the 10 commandments, should be critiqued, should be criticized, and should be told not to. So he was quite harif about it. Because to do that, who midarche haminim, even just to stand up for the 10 commandments, is throwing a bone, as it were, to the Christians and saying, oh, the 10 commandments, they're special. And this Rav was very unhappy. Hama'aminim, because they believe, shele esa hadibrois ma'ale al shar ha-Torah. The esa hadibrois has a higher status than the rest of the Torah. Lefishe kol dava asher leminim boi emuna shoyne midas raboseinu. Because anything that the Christians do, which is different from our tradition, chayavim anu lehitrachek bo, we have to distance ourselves from mehem ulahavdel mehem. That's what the old rabbi said. Therefore, he made them sit down. He said, you can't stand up because it's heretical. It's like the Christians. Now, what does the Rambam say? Tshuva. Ze asher hinig harav haniftar. This minag that the Rav who just passed away brought into your shul, leishev, who to sit down, hu haroi, this is the correct minag, v'rayosav ra'ayot nechonot. And his proofs for this are extremely solid. V'kach hay ra'oi la'asot b'chol makom she minhagim la'amod. And this is what you should do in every single place where the people stand up for the 10 commandments. Tzarech lemanam, you have to stop them. Biglal ma shemagia bazeh min ahefsed ve'emunah. Because it's going to undermine people's emunah. Sheyesh b'torah, because they're going to think that there is in the Torah madrigot, different levels. U'miktzeh asher mu'ula mimiktzeh. And there are there are some parts which are more, have a higher status than others. And this is a terrible thing to say. We have to block every single attempt that brings people to this kind of understanding. And if you come and tell me that in Baghdad, people do stand up for the Aseret HaDibros, and for Baghdad today, read London, Teaneck, wherever people stand up, wherever you come from. If you're going to tell me that's what Jews do, Ein zeh raya b'shul panim. Said, I don't care what they do in Baghdad. That's not a proof of anything. Because if there are people who are sick, we don't make other people who are healthy sick to be like the people who are sick. We heal the sick. We don't make the healthy sick. We amputate. If there's something bad in a sick person, we cut it off. I don't care what they do in Baghdad. The Rambam generally did not have any time for Minhag Baghdad and Iraq and Iran. He said that's not our Minhag, and he got into some significant disputes with the rabbis of Baghdad. He said we don't do that at all. The Elaha Karayim, and he says, and just in case you're wondering, and this is very interesting, you've got to get your heretics clear. Karites, these Karites that we have in Egypt, he says, Einam Ela, these are not the same ones. These are not the Minim. Okay? Ashekorim Osam Chachamim Minim, these are not the people that the rabbis called Minim. Elakorim Osam Sedukim Ubaitusim. Okay? They would Sedukim and Baitusim, and the modern iteration of the Sedukim is the Karaites. Meaning the Karaites don't have a problem with the Torah. Lehefach. The Karaites have a problem with the oral law. The Karaites think that only the Torah is valid, but the whole Torah is just as valid as every other part of the Torah. So don't get confused. Don't start saying that, oh yeah, heretics, we know how to deal with them. We've got Karaites as well. No, no, no. Karaites are completely different. Lahoitze Hakutim, as opposed to the Samaritans, the Haminim, and the Minim, the early Christians, they don't believe in the Torah at all. Forget about the oral Torah. They don't even believe in the written Torah. And they seem to say things like, Torah is not from God, or only parts of it from God. There is no distinction between a machish b'Torah kula, someone who denies the whole Torah, or machish pasuk echad va'ayme Moshe b'pi atzma amra. And of course, you know, he put this in his eighth principle of faith, that there anyone who says even one of the minor psukim that you might say, it's talking about some random Canaanite princess, that's obviously not the same as the Shema. No, no, no. Every pasuk in the Torah is just as important, just as authoritative, authoritative as every other pasuk in the Torah. And therefore, he says, we have to crush this immediately. You may not stand up for Aseret Dibros.
But didn't they stand at Har
Sinai? Oh, we'll get to that in a minute. The Rambam knows that, but doesn't care. Because there's no... they did stand at Har Sinai. But this is not Har Sinai, is it? Now, you might turn around and say Shavuos is different from laning during Yisro and Ve'eschanan. Yisro and Ve'eschanan were just laning. And therefore, if you stand up, that's making a negative point. But Shavuos is a reenactment of Har Sinai, and they did stand at Har Sinai. The Rambam doesn't want anyone to stand ever. Yes, even if they stood at Har Sinai, it's not a problem if you sit down. Most Jewish people like to sit down whenever they can, no? So, sit down, okay, fine. Oh, so you're saying, but we stand up. So have a look at number 11 and 12. So number 11 and 12 are two Sfaradi poskim, one in Italy, and the other one, actually both of them in Italy, who are asked this question. Number 11, let's look at this quickly. She'en kan makam liminim lirdois kevan she kavanasoi hi mufusemet. We are not worried about the minim, because everyone knows what the minim hold up. We live in Italy. The Vatican, everyone knows the Vatican. Everybody knows the Christians. No one's going to get confused. No, who's a Christian, who's a Jew, it's clear. Okay, letet el libenu. No one's going to think for a minute. The eitu ba'oina hahi. At that point, sheyesh ba hidur ki ilu hikbanu pnei ashchina b'mamad hagadol v'nar azeh. And if we give a special hidur that we stand up, exactly what you said, we stood at Har Sinai. We're giving special precedence to the fact that we're remembering Har Sinai. No one's going to have a problem with that. No one's going to think that you're becoming a Christian because you're reenacting Har Sinai. Lefikach kol makom shenau v'aminag, like you said, any place that has the minag haniskar, which has been mentioned to stand up, you let them be proud standers. This is what we stand for, as it were. Okay? They're standing up because they stood at Har Sinai. Ah, it looks like you're a Christian. Leave me alone. No one thinks I'm a Christian if I live in Bergenfield and I stand up for Aseret Dibros. You know? Ain't happening. So he says, it's fine. The Chida also said, okay, but look at what he says even more. He says, I feel it is the minhag of people to stand. Lakum, kulam, everyone gets up, Aseret Dibros. Nira, therefore, I think, shechayavim hakol la'amod. Not only can you stand, you must stand. Ve'ein l'shum echad l'she'eh yoshev. You may not be the one that stays sitting. Degam she'einu min adin lakum. Even if they're not really meant to stand, even if you could argue that there's good grounds to say the standing is a problem, ata she'nagu kol hakal bazeh. Now that everybody does that, it becomes an obligation on everyone. It's very interesting. Why? If not, it looks like it becomes a joke. And you know how balabatim like to make leitzonos in the shul. And our minig is that, you know, when people say, what's the minig in this shul? Our minig is to have a machlaikas, you know? No. That's just a zilzal. You're making fun. You're making fun. That's not how it is. So if half the people stand, some of the people stand, some of the people stood, it just becomes everyone's kind of joking and it's not okay. It's a zilzal. You're making a mockery. V'ad amru, and there's also Maseches Derech Eretz. If we get to it at the end, it says, lo yeshev bein ha'oimdim. If everyone's standing, you can't sit down. Umizeh karatagar harav. And he brings from other places the Knesset HaGadola that says you may not sit down when everyone's standing. Barosha ala yoshvim ba'ei sheva brochas. People have a minute to stand up for sheva brochas at the chuppah. Why? Why do you have to stand for sheva brochas? Sit down for sheva brochas. Maybe you would stand as covered when the kala and the chosan walks in. You know, you stand at a bris, you know, to someone's doing a mitzvah. But during the sheva brochas, sit down. Why would you need? You don't have to stand during a brocha. But people stand now. And he cries at people who sit during Shavuot, the kevan shenagu la'amod, ze sheyoshev over al lo yeshev ben ha'imdim. This one who's sitting down is now breaking halacha, because everyone's standing up. Ah, there's no reason for them to stand up. They do. Don't be the one who sits. And in case you think this is theoretical, I once went to a chuppah where a learned man, let's put it that way, refused to stand up when the kala walked past, because he said it's chukat ha'goy. It's chukat ha'goy to stand up when the kala comes past, and everybody stand up, and he sat down like this. He said, sat down with his hands on the chair like this. And if I'd have known at the time, I would have said to him, you know, you can't sit down when everyone stands up, even if they're, you know, it's not such a base custom. Yes, Amy.
So I had a teacher who said you shouldn't stand for these parts of the Torah, but you can't sit either, so you should stand for the whole.
So that's brought down by many commentators. That's actually Rav Moshe Feinstein's advice. We're going to see that in a minute. I would mention that these two Sfaradi poskim, the Rav Azulai, Rav Abuhav, and the Chida, Rav Azulai, neither of them had seen the Tshuva of the Rambam, because it wasn't in print. I don't know if they would have been so quick to insist that everyone has to stand up if they'd seen how strong the Rambam was against the minhag to stand up.
Why wasn't it seen?
Because it was only brought into print in the 20th century. It was only found some in the Geniza and some in other places. It just wasn't available. Rav Yosef says not to stand, okay, to sit down for the Aseres Hadibros. He obviously does know the Tshuva of the Rambam. But Rav Moshe Feinstein is what Amy mentioned just before. Have a look at number 15 over the page. L'chein nira de'ein l'shanas min ha'minag. He says the main thing is don't change the minag. V'hu k'kol minag. This is like every minag. She'af elu sheba mimokam sheloi na'ag. Okay, even if you come from a place where they used to do something different, asur midin al yishane adam mipnei ha'machlokas. You may not cause a machlokas. If you come from a place where they used to stand or they used to sit, and you go to a place where they do the opposite, you've got to go with the flow. Okay? And if you really object to standing up for the Aseres Hadibros, so stand up for the whole laning. No, the whole laning. Or maybe some people do one aliyah, but if they do one aliyah, everybody knows why they stand. They stand up for, some people stand up for the whole laning every Shabbos. So you can be one of those people twice a year. Yes, sir. Okay, that's interesting, because I, you're asking a good question. There is a halacha that when you're making a birkas hamitzvah, you should stand up. Okay, so making the mitzvah, the bracha, al yashay kedushan of mitzvah savet sivano al mikra megillah, you would have to stand up. Now you're going to tell me, well, the only person reading the Megillah is the guy in the middle. Nobody else is reading the Megillah. But I'm not sure that's how it always was. It could be that maybe people were reading their own Megillah. And he's motzi people with a bracha. Correct. So if people were sitting down and reading their own Megillah, let's say, they would have to stand for the bracha. Just like you stand. Why do people stand for the bracha on Sefer HaOmer? It's halacha. When you stand, it's learned from the kama, where the standing the wheat. I can't remember exactly what the derivation is. I didn't look it up. But you have to stand to say Brikas HaMitzvah. Yeah.
In that regard, I've also known people who stand for the brachos on Kriyas HaTorah for each aliyah.
Yes. Well, that's for Baruch Hu. That's the Davar Shebekedusha. So you stand up for a Davar Shebekedusha. Ashkenazim, at least, stand up for Kaddish, they stand up for Baruch Hu, etc. And Sfaradim don't. And do you have to stand, or is a little bob good enough? You know? This thing that people do, like, you know, like this, that has a real halachic status. That has a real halachic status. It's not just people being lazy and just kind of fidgeting on their chairs. Sometimes when you have to stand, you have to stand. And sometimes a little hidur is enough. And it could be that that's how it works. So I think they stand for the brachas because it's a davar shebekedusha. They're saying baruchu, etc., etc. So that's why they stand. Bottom line, should you stand or should you sit? So you should do what everybody else does, that's for sure. You shouldn't be a stander with the sitters or a sitter with the standers. And I brought you some of the psakim. Rav Eliashiv says, sit. Don't stand. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach He didn't stand. I don't know if he prevented other people, but he didn't stand during the Aseret HaDibros. Rav Chaim David Alevi from Tel Aviv said, you should sit down if you can, but you shouldn't tell people they're doing things wrong when they stand. Rav Moshe Sternberg says, you can stand, okay? You know, you can't argue with these people, they're big people. Rav Soloveitchik also permitted standing during the Aseret HaDibros, but I brought you in the footnotes from Rabbi Ziegler, Zichron Livrocha, who many of you here knew well and used to be very much a part of the shir when we were in the other building. Rabbi Ziegler writes about Rav Soloveitchik that he made a distinction between during the year and Shavuos. He says, because when you're reading Tam Tachton, meaning the regular laning, which they would read in Ve'eschanan and Yisro, then you're doing regular laning, and therefore if you stand up, you're making a distinction that this laning is different from this laning, and that's a problem. But if you read Tam Elyon, so everybody can hear, this is not regular laning, then this is because of Har Sinai, and therefore standing up does not make a special point. That's a very nice idea, but that only works if you read Tam Tachton everywhere all the time, Tam Elyon on Shavuos. Okay, so that's the issue of standing. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You'll probably do whatever you normally do, but make sure everybody, well, make sure. How can you make sure? But people should try to do what everybody else does. They shouldn't make a machlokas, and they shouldn't make fun of it. Okay, good. What shape were the luchos? That's an interesting question. So, were they this shape? They don't have any luchos here, okay? So if you go to different synagogues, you'll see square ones, you'll see rounded ones, you'll see, I've never seen circular, you know, luchos, but you'll definitely see different shapes. So what shape are the luchos? So the Torah describes the shape, that describes the luchos, but it doesn't give us specific instructions on the shape. Number 17, Vayitin el Moshe kechalatzo ledaber ito. So God gave to Moshe when he finished talking to him, Har Sinai, shnei luchot ha'idot, two tablets, okay, of testimony. Luchot even, they were stone tablets, tuvim be'etzba elokim. They were written with the finger of God. It doesn't give any indication exactly of the shapes, except that they were put in the Aron. We saw that they put them into the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh, of course, was square or rectangular. That's very clear. But that's not to say that they couldn't have been rounded inside the Aron Kodesh. Who says that they have to fit exactly in? So if you look here in number 19, the Gemara says in Bava Basra as follows. Aron she'asa Moshe. So the Aron Kodesh that Moshe made, amatayim v'chetzi arko, was 2.5 amas long. Okay? The Amah v'chetzi rachba, and 1.5 amot wide. The Amah v'chetzi kamata, and 1.5 amot tall. The Amah bat shishat tfachim. And this is an Amah which is made from 6 tfachim. There was a debate as to whether they always used a 6 tfachim Amah or a 5 tfachim Amah. This is an Amah from the tip of this finger to the elbow. And this is a tefach. And it's pretty much, I don't know, 1, 2, 3. Actually, I'm not going to get 6 of those in my Amah, am I? It's interesting. Maybe I have oversized fists or undersized arms. I'm not sure. Or maybe it's not relevant to my arms at all. Or maybe both, yeah. But either way, it says this was 6 tfachim. And therefore, you have a dimensions of the Aron Kodesh, which come to 15 by 9 by 9. Okay, of tfachim. The haluchais and the luchais are kan shisha, they were 6 tfachim long. The rachban shisha, and they were 6 tfachim wide. The avian shlosha, and they were 3 tfachim thick.
That's very thick.
Umunachos keneged arko shel aron, and they were oriented in the aron according to the length of the aron. Now, when he says the luchos were 6 by 6, does that mean each one was 6 by 6? So you got 6 and 6 like that, and they're somehow sort of fitted into the luchos. In which case, they were quite snug in the luchos. Or does it mean that both together were 6? It's not entirely clear. In other places, the Rishonim seems to say something different. Number 20. Haluchos hayukol echad ve'echad arkan shisha tfacham v'rachban shleisha. Okay, so maybe they were 6 long and 3 wide. So maybe 6 by 6 was them both together. They were 6 by 3 and together they were 6 by 6. But either way, it doesn't indicate exactly whether they were rounded on the top or square on the top. Now normally 6 by 6 by 3, you think of a square, right? There's no indication that they were rounded. Where would you even think that they were rounded on the top? Where would you even get that idea? Not like, you know, triangular at the top. I've never seen triangular luchos. Even though, by the way, there's an opinion that the krashim, that the beams in the Mishkan, were triangular at the top. I've never seen luchos with an angle. Why would you think they were rounded? So the reason is because there was something called a luach Pinkas at the time of Chazal, which was rounded. Okay? Let's have a look what this is. In number 21. Says the Mishnah about Hilchah Shabbat, HaKosev Shtei Osias, if you write two otiot, okay, then you're breaking Shabbos. What if you write them as Shnei Luche Pinkas? If you write them on two of the luchot of the pinkas, v'hein nagim zeh b'zeh, and then they join each other, chayav, that's called two letters. What's going on here? So they had something, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, called a diptych. Diptych? Diptych. I will defer to your pronunciation, since you seem to know what you're saying, okay? And I'm just reading it. A diptych. What is a diptych? A diptych is a two sides of a little like notebook thing, which with a hinge in the middle, which closes shut like this, and therefore it's saying, and they used to have wax on each side of it, and therefore you could practice writing if you're a kid at school, whatever, and then rub it off and wax it over. If you write, let's say, an aleph on this side, and a bet on this side, and then you open them up so that the aleph and the bet are together, that's called two letters together. So the diptych was rounded on the top. That was the classic style of the diptych, and therefore it could well be that it was rounded on the top. And in fact, there are very ancient, or at least medieval, references to the luchos being rounded on the top. If you look on page 5, I brought you here that even from the 11th century, there are English manuscripts with rounded luchos from the 12th century. This was the standard way that that they did it. Henry III, before he expelled the Jews from England, made them wear a badge. Okay, a little badge. I don't know if it was yellow or not, but a badge. And it was in the shape of the luchot, and they were rounded. The Jews' identification badge in medieval England was a rounded luchos. And therefore, that's pretty standard that you find this. And that's really where it came from. And I think it probably came from this diptych, and it was a standard way that the Christians represented it. Rav Moshe Sternberg has a tshuva, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside, where he says, look, some people get very irritated about this issue. I know that Chabad rabbis get very upset. A Chabad rabbi came to my wife's community when she was a teenager, and they had rounded luchot, and he was very unhappy, because the Rebbe was very unhappy. They had a Chanukiah like this. Oh, there's something against rounded? I don't know if those two things fit together. But he was very unhappy. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was very unhappy with rounded luchos. He said it was minag hagoyim. It was Christians. And it was the Christians that always... We didn't have any medieval art representing the luchos. The Christians had medieval art. Interestingly, when you find printed books, there are Zohars and other printed books from the 16th, 17th century, Jewish books, and they've got rounded luchos on the front pages. But maybe those front pages were drawn by Christians. You also have books from the early printed period that have naked women on the front of them as well. Cherubs and angels and all sorts of things. I'm not sure they were done with rabbinic approval. Okay? So just the fact that there's a front of a book with a rounded luchos doesn't mean that that was a Jewish minag. Maybe not. Maybe the Christians drew those as well. Oh, so we get to him in a minute. So Rav Moshe Sternberg says, you know something? Straight is probably better than rounded, but don't worry about it. Don't make a machar, don't make a fuss. And he says, when they put these things on the Aron Kodesh, they're not just doing it as an aesthetic thing. Who says they're really trying to reproduce the luchos? If you were trying to reproduce the luchos, you wouldn't just put the first two words, would you? You'd write the whole thing. Okay, which is very interesting. Let's look at the last point here, and then we'll finish. This is the point that we looked at in more detail not so long ago, so I didn't put it in great detail here, which is what was the font of the text. So if you remember, we talked about Charlton Heston back in the day. I'm not going to go through him too much. The fact that Cecil B. DeMille did rounded luchos is not surprising. The fact that he did Ksav Ivri is interesting, and we talked about Ksav Ivri, the ancient paleo-Canaanite script. But if you look for a second in the Mishneh Avot, in Pirkei Avot, number 23, Asara Dvarim Nivru Be'erev Shabbat, 10 things were created in the twilight zone. They're half part of this world, half part of the Shabbos world, the non-physical world. And of those things were the following: Haktav, the Hamichtav, the Haluchos. They're not quite of this world, those things. What is the Ktav and what is the Michtav? So look at Rabbeinu Yonah 24. This is something we need to meditate and ponder on, and maybe have a whole shir on. Haktav says number 24. HaTorah shehaita ktuva lifnei Hashem yitbarach misheshet yemei abreshis. This is the Ktav, the writing, quote unquote, which was present before God. Be'esh shchora al gabi esh levana. Black fire on white fire. This is not the Ketav of the printed page. This is not even the Ketav of the Luchot, which was an actual physical Ketav. This is the Torah as God's mind. And if you're interested, Rabbi Cordoza produced a book 35 years ago, maybe, little pamphlet called "The Torah as God's Mind," which is absolutely fascinating and talks about how the Torah, if you like, coalesced, crystallized from an entirely spiritual reality, which was when it says God looked into the Torah and created the world. It doesn't mean he looked into a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is a physical thing, obviously. God doesn't have a Sefer Torah. So what does God look into? God looks into the Torah as God's mind. And if you're a Mekubal, the Torah is one of the Sefirot. It's identified with Tiferet. It's part of how we perceive God. And then it coalesces into white fire, black fire and white fire. What does it mean, black fire and white fire? Some kind of spiritual representation of the... There's a differentiation now between what will become the background and the surface. So that's the Ketav. And then HaMichtav, the Michtav is Tzurot HaOtiot Charut Al HaLuchot. The Michtav is what was written on the Luchot, which were, of course, miraculous in their own way. Again, part of this world, part of the next world. You could see all the way through them. And therefore, you've got this whole question we looked at in depth. What was the miracle? Was it the Mem, which has like the hole, the bagel with the hole in the middle, okay, with the standing? Or was it the Ayin? Because in Ketav Ivri, it's in the ancient scripts, it's the ayin which is round, not the mem, like an eye. Okay, we talked about that at great length. We did that, I think, last year. We looked at how the Torah was written and the original Ketav. I've just brought you on the top there, which is very interesting. There is actually a significant debate about this in the Gemara, which we looked at in depth in Sanhedrin, as to what was the original Ketav. Was the original Ketav the one we have today? Was the original writing the Paleo-Canaanite writing? What implications does that have for a million different things? Kabbalah, Gematria, etc., etc., which I'm not getting into again now. But this idea, I think we need to look a little bit as to what was the Michtav, what was the Ketav. And I thoroughly recommend this booklet from Rabbi Cordoza if you can get hold of it. Maybe it's a Google book now. Maybe it's online. The Torah as God's Mind. Really, really interesting book. The last point I just want to make is a point about the font size, which is a point I've made before, but not for a long time. Have a look in number 31 for a second. This is a fascinating source. Says the Mechilta, Notnu aseret hadibrois, how were the Ten Commandments given? Chamisha al luach zeh, v'chamisha al luach zeh. And that's how most people represent them. 5 and 5. However, that's not the only opinion. Divrei Rebbe Chananya ben Gamliel, Chanina ben Gamliel. Chachamim Omrim, the majority opinion is Asara Aluach Zeh, the Asara Aluach Zeh. They were given in duplicate. 10 on one side, 10 on the other side. 2 copies. Why? Shneema, look at the pasuk. Et advarim ha'ele, because these things, Diber Hashem, God said, these 10 commandments, v'yichtaveim, and they were written al shnei luchot avanim. Why are you thinking it's 5 and 5? God said these 10 things and they were written on 2 tablets of stone. Duplicate. And actually makes a lot of sense. And many of the modern day commentators make a point that when you're making a Brit, Lahavdil in the ancient world, when they made a treaty between a senior ruler and a junior vassal, they would write it out in duplicate. This is your half. This is my half. We each keep a half. Yeah, and if you were subjugated to a much more important king, you would deposit your half with that king as well. And therefore you say, I trust you enough to look after my half as well. Think about when you're signing a contract. What, the buyer gets one half and the seller gets one half and each has their own half. If I give you my half, I'm telling you, I trust you so much, I'm even going to give you my half of my part of the contract. And therefore they put in the iron together. And it's an interesting idea that they were 10 and 10 in duplicate, because it's this treaty, my part, your part, and then where do we keep both parts?
Well, it was in the Mishkan.
What's that?
What did they keep in the Mishkan?
Both parts, both luchos. So if they were 10 and 10, you have both copies of the Aseret Dibros in the Aron Kodesh right there. And the Jewish people are saying, you keep your copy, God, and you can have our copy as well. I trust you completely, and we'll take it from. Interesting idea. You have to see where you want to take that idea, but definitely there's a machlokes. Finally, I just want to make a point which I think is very fascinating. The Mabit, Rav Moshe Detrani, makes a very interesting point in the 1500s. And he says, look, the print on the Luchos covered the Luchos. There are Maimre Chazal that talk about the fact that the Luchos were covered by the print. But he says, count the words. He says it very explicitly. There were more words on the first half than there were on the second, assuming 5 and 5. Assuming 5 and 5. You can count the words later. I brought you, I first heard this from Professor Aumann many years ago. He was giving, shortly after he got a Nobel Prize, he was giving a shiur, and I reproduced this. This is not one he did. But this is very, you know, you can see this very clearly. The first five, if you do 5 and 5, are about 185 words. And the second five are much shorter in terms of length. There's about 20 words. Says the Mabit, obviously the luchas came in two font sizes, in two print sizes. There's the big print, and there's the small print. What is the big print? The big print is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. He says, because that's where the Yetzer Hara is. Oh, you keep Shabbos? Shkoyach. You keep kosher? Shkoyach. Are you honest? Are you kind? Do you help other people? Do you judge other people? Oh, that's where the real Yetzer Hara is. So he wants the, God wants the Jewish people to see immediately the big print is all the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, because that's the real work. That's where the real work happens. And therefore, the first image that the Jewish people had before Moshe either smashed or maybe dropped, just because don't forget, the if the luchas, if there were spaces in the letters, miraculously, when the letters fly away, all the stone comes back and the whole thing falls down. Either way, before they were dropped or smashed, they saw this visual image that they have to focus on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. I don't think that's a bad message going into Shavuos, that we believe the whole Torah is Min HaShamayim, but some bits are harder to keep than others, and we need to think about that too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll leave it there.